As far as the learning opportunities, I think the very simple one is never putting yourself in a position to, have any of those type of issues arise. Never put yourself in a position where you let the devil in the door. I think, those are things that as you're mentoring young guys, certainly you're trying to impress upon them, how they can put themselves in a position to be successful.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, Inside Lacrosse analyst, my old Hopkins buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. There are three top 10 matchups this weekend, and as we head to the home stretch of the conference season, there are some crucial league battles this week, including one in the America East, and we'll discuss that with our guest this week, as you heard, Bryant head coach Brad Ross. Lots to get to this week. Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, we're going to jump right into it. We always sort of start on the week that was, get big thoughts on it before we move to the weekend ahead. And there are some great games this week. So let's start with Glovegate. A couple of games that you saw, including that one at Ohio State on Friday night, which was a great night for fans of the sport who are home watching the game or on site at games. But let's start in Columbus, Ohio last week.
So nobody wanted to play on Easter. That's why you had all the games on Friday and Saturday. Before we start the games, let me tell you, we talk a lot about extracurriculars on this podcast. I was in Chicago all last weekend. We called the games from our studio because of travel, getting from Columbus to State College. There's no easy way. So our leadership made the decision to have us call the games from Chicago. Friday night, I was with Joe Beninati. Saturday night, I was with Jason Ross Jr. Got to Wrigley on Friday to watch a Cubs game. It was a 1:20 first pitch central time. So went to Wrigley Field. That was awesome. I only stayed about four innings because I had to get back to the hotel. I wanted to make sure I got back in time to get ready for the game and get to the studio. And as I'm in the Uber driving home, I go on Twitter, and Anish Shroff posts a picture of him at the Cubs game. So I text him. I'm like, dude, are you in Chicago? You were at Wrigley? He goes, yeah. I go, I just left. So you got to be kidding me. So long story short, I met up with Anish at his hotel after the Maryland-Ohio State game, which was delayed because my phone was ringing off the hook. Texts were flying. Everybody wanted to talk about the glove. I've never seen anything like that in my life. Is it within the rules? Yes. Would I have called something like that? No. But I'm not a head coach. I'm not looking for that advantage to win the game. It was a terrific game. It was a terrific weekend overall in the Big Ten. All three games, for the first time in the history of the conference, all three games on one particular weekend went to overtime. So there's a little tidbit for you. The only parting comment that I'll have, Dan, is several people have been like, well, at least the glove call didn't affect the outcome of the game. And it completely affected the game. It stopped the game for what? 7-10 minutes? All the flow, all the rhythm was gone. Secondly, and this is not anyone's, this is not on Maryland, I thought it blew things up from a mental standpoint for Ohio State. So those are two components that absolutely had an effect on the outcome of the game. The much more I point towards the first point that I made as being much more significant. And we're going to see. I am hearing that the NCAA may be releasing, and I stress may, this is all rumor, may be releasing a statement. Because if you think about uniformity, a couple years ago, it came down that every team had to have the same undershirt on, same color undershirt. Then a couple of years later, it came down that everybody had to have the same helmet, a color helmet. If you remember, there were some exceptions, in particular Albany, when De Hoogenantico played for the Great Danes. He had a special helmet because the regular ones didn't fit. Do you need uniform color and gloves? Sure. You can't have a situation where one guy's wearing orange, another guy's wearing yellow, another guy's wearing blue. But I mean, you know, and that's mostly for when guys run shots out and they're diving. You know, if you see a gray glove, you know, that's Ohio State. If you see a black glove, you know, that's Maryland. And I tell you, to wrap this up, it was amazing to see the number of photographs coming out of current teams playing this season, Maryland included, wearing different gloves and different color gloves. It'll be interesting to see how this progresses moving forward. I'm not thinking that coaches are going to be calling this, moving forward, but you never know.
I think equipment managers and coaches will make sure that their team are all in the same alignment from here on out this season for sure.
Look, I had some coaches texting me saying, look, when we got our shipment of gloves in this year, our goalie gloves were different from the field gloves. And we had to take paint and paint the gloves that were different to stay within compliance. So they were completely on the side of calling that out. And then you had others that were just like, I can't believe they did that, kind of thing. So it seems to be a mixed bag. The one thing, and I tweeted this out, the one thing I want to make clear is some people were saying, well, he was the face-off was in violation because he had a white glove and a white head. And the only thing that needs to be different on the stick is the tape, the 6 inches of tape or paint from the throat down the shaft. So in other words, you know, a kid can have a white head, as long as he has pink tape, blue tape, red tape, and a white glove, that they're okay. You know, the only thing that has to be in contrast on that face-off man stick is the tape or the paint, the color of the tape or the paint.
Just a remarkable sequence of events in that game that led to great drama. And I love that people are talking about it. I think it's great for the sport that there's this buzz about.
We were talking about this on Saturday night in the studio. People had the same reaction. You know, controversy is good. Drama is good. You think about women's college basketball, the Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark situation. What was pointed out to me, because I don't follow women's basketball, Caitlin Clark is like the ultimate trash talker, the ultimate taunter in the game. And I think she even made a statement, like somebody asked her about Angel Reese, like the finger and the you can't see me. She's like, I don't care. I do that all the time, kind of thing. It was it was media that was really latching onto that, and blowing it up.
About that controversy, the fact on the Monday after the women's championship game and even the Tuesday and the rest of the week, there were people talking about it because people were talking about it.
Right.
And then more people started talking about it because other people were starting to talk about it. So it was, an involvement of fandom around the women's basketball game, and we're seeing some of that in lacrosse. And another thing, did you see the crowd at the Rutgers game on Friday night when they played Michigan?
It was a great crowd.
Outstanding crowd. It looked like, TV often hones in on individual fans to not show an empty stadium, but they were doing panned out wide crowd shots because there were so many people at the game.
Yeah.
It was a great atmosphere at Rutgers and around the country this weekend. I mean, we saw it when Duke played Notre Dame. What a great crowd on Saturday. And, you know, backing up a step, we have a new number one for the fifth week in a row. There's a new number one at the top of the poll. This week it's Notre Dame. But lots of great, intense lacrosse action going on. And this week will be no different.
Yeah, we got to mention Notre Dame Duke, the Irish pulling away from the Blue Devils late. Virginia scoring a big road victory over North Carolina. We already mentioned the Big Ten. Ivy League continues to be interesting. I don't think that we're going to be previewing any games coming up simply because their rankings are as such, but Cornell loss to Harvard. How crazy is this year where Harvard loses to Dartmouth their first Ivy League win since 2015. And then a couple weeks later, Cornell, which we had been talking about in that, you know, quote unquote, Big Five, goes down to the Crimson.
Well, let's get right into that then. Let's talk about the weekend previews. Again, I said there's three top 10 matchups. UVA versus Duke Part 2 will happen as well. But let's start with that game. Number six, Cornell. They're 8-2 on the season now. They had a win over Marquette earlier this week. They'll play at number seven, Army, who's 9-1. The game's at noon. And this is a huge game for Cornell. This is a huge game for the Ivy League. This is if Army wins this game, I think the Ivy League is a one-bid league, no matter who wins the conference tournament. If Cornell can win this, I think Cornell can lose the championship. Let's say they get to the Ivy League tournament and lose. I think they can get two bids. But I think if they lose this game, it might be a one-bid league.
Yeah, look, it's a huge game, and Cornell was able to – there's nothing better than having a short turnaround after a disappointing loss and getting back on the field and, quote-unquote, getting it out of your system. So they handled Marquette midweek. Now they play an Army team that has just been slowly climbing the charts. Like, Army's like that, you know, I grew up listening to the Casey Kasem Top 40. You know, they're like that song that you really don't like and you really don't think it's that good, but it has that slow climb up the charts. You know, Army's balanced, they're disciplined, they're tough. 9-1, you know, tremendous season thus far for the Black Knights. And it's at Mikey Stadium. You know, I haven't seen a weather report. Looks like, you know, weekend weather up and down the Eastern Seaboard is going to be pretty favorable, but you never know coming off the Hudson, what it can bring. So to your point, you know, really big game between the Big Red and the Army Black Knights.
Second game is, as I said, rematch, UVA versus Duke Part 2. Number two, Virginia. They're 7-2 overall, 1-1 in the ACC. They'll travel to Duke to take on the number three ranked Blue Devils, who are now 10-2, 3-1 in the ACC. And this game's at 1:00.
Yeah, so Duke smarting from that trip to South Bend. They beat Virginia a couple of weeks ago. This is the wonky part of the ACC. I think you play two teams twice. So Duke and Virginia will tussle for the second straight time. North Carolina and Syracuse playing for the second time this weekend. And we'll talk about that one later. You know, people are asking, like, why isn't Connor Schellenberger attacking as much? It looks like he's hurt. I mean, it looks like he was visibly limping against North Carolina. Don't know the extent of that injury, but, you know, if there is an injury there. But this will be a great game. I mean, these are two teams that we could very well see on Memorial Day weekend, if not on Memorial Day.
In the Big Ten, number 18, Ohio State. They're underwater at 5-6 and 1-2 in the Big Ten. We'll travel to Homewood Field to take on the Blue Jays. It's homecoming, Johns Hopkins this week. Number seven, Blue Jays, who are 9-4, 2-1 in the Big Ten after their double overtime loss to Penn State. That game is at 2:00.
Yeah, this game will be on ESPNU. Joe Beninati and I on the call. Ohio State, just, you know, really tough break on Friday against Maryland, and they couldn't close that out, led the entire game. You know, the only lead Maryland had was after they scored the game winner in overtime. And they're coming off, they're going to Johns Hopkins to play a Blue Jay team that is coming off a tough overtime loss to Penn State a week ago. So how do each of these right the ship? These Ohio State seniors, we had the opportunity to talk to Jack Myers, Mitchell Pelkey this week. They've never lost to Hopkins. Let that sink in. They've never lost to Johns Hopkins. So the Blue Jays, they need this one. And boy, would it be, you know, it's homecoming. It's your 30-year reunion, isn't it, old man? Yeah, I know my wife is in your class, and she'll be on campus celebrating with some of her friends. So big-time atmosphere on television, huge conference game.
Our next game is a huge game in the America East between two top undefeated teams in that league. This is for first place. Before we talk about that game, let's bring in our guest this week, Bryant head coach Brad Ross. Please welcome into the show the first-year head coach of the Bryant Bulldogs, Brad Ross. Coach, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So, Coach, you've been an assistant at Ohio State and Navy most recently, and then you make the transition to be the head coach. Walk us through the process of evaluating the Bryant job. What were some of the things that attracted you and your family to the Rhode Island school, to the program, to take over the Bulldogs?
Now, you know, I think when we start this conversation, you know, it starts with Coach Pressler, obviously. You know, that's somebody that has had an unbelievable impact on my life. We've stayed in touch, really, since the day I graduated college, and obviously worked for him for 4 years. So I would probably speak to him once a week, really, for these past, you know, 10 years since I was away from Bryant. So I was very aware of all the changes that they made in the school, certainly. But when you go about, to use your words, evaluating the job, for me, there really wasn't an evaluation process. It was so obvious. You know, I start with the administration. They've done a terrific job here supporting the program and putting the program in a place to be successful. And then obviously for my family, I know a lot of people don't know this, but my wife is from Cumberland, Rhode Island, which is only about 15 minutes away. So an opportunity to get up here and, you know, be around more family in a profession that we all know it can be challenging with that respect. And then lastly, just the program itself, you know, to come into a program that you're really taking over for one of your biggest mentors. And I don't think anybody could be put into a better position, you know, than I was about 6 months ago.
When you look at your schedule and your body of work thus far, you're 8-2 and really a terrific run thus far. Critical game this weekend in the America East. Not only are you coming into a new job, but Bryant is navigating and migrating from the Northeast Conference to the America East. What challenges or what opportunities, you know, let's look at both sides of the fence there, did that present to you and then to the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned the 8-2 start. You know, there's this delicate balance of being really proud and excited about what you've accomplished, but understanding that legitimately nothing has been guaranteed yet, right? There's certainly a way for us to not be playing in the conference tournament. And so I think that in and of itself gives you a ton of motivation, you know, to practice and continue to practice well. You know, I think the challenge is anytime you join a new conference or take over in a new place or become an assistant in a new place, you have to go through this familiarizing process where you don't know anyone in the conference. You know, certainly you've watched people as a fan, but every week for us in conference play is a new team that we need to understand and learn their tendencies, learn their players. So that has been both fun and challenging. And we're excited for, you know, this coming week and an opponent that the program has played in the past, you know, but for us, you know, we're certainly playing a different style now, you know, so to speak. So I don't know how much you can take away from last year's contest.
You're a Duke guy, and anybody that has an opportunity to speak with you, you know, understands you're a pretty deep thinker. You're very articulate. Justin Turry, head coach at St. John's, Matt Donowski, assistant coach at Duke University. What is it about Duke guys getting into college coaching? You would figure Duke guys would be Wall Street or, you know, attorneys, doctors, but going into coaching lacrosse, and it's worked out pretty well for some Blue Devil alumni. Taylor Ray at St. Joe's, another one.
Kevin Cassis.
Cassis, yep. Kyle Turry, you know, the list kind of goes on and on. I mean, I think the answer for me is actually pretty simple. You know, what Coach Chenowski did a great job of when we were playing for him and Coach Presser before him, you know, is that lacrosse was really, really important to Duke guys. Certainly education component is huge. There's no doubt about that. But we were lacrosse players. We loved playing the game, and our coaches did a great job making sure we enjoyed playing the game. So the thought of having that taken away from you as a senior or a fifth year, you couldn't bear it, so you did the next best thing, and you got into coaching.
Brad, you've earned the reputation as an excellent recruiter. When you think of the ideal Bryant lacrosse student athlete, what characteristics make up that recruit?
Well, I mean, I think one of the themes that, you know, we're talking about right now, and certainly our program spends a lot of time talking about, and I just mentioned it, is enjoying the game and enjoying to practice, enjoying to do extra work. So for us, you know, that's really the most important thing as you start, you know, is that somebody that loves to play, you know, they love to do extra work, they love to compete, do they play other sports? You know, because in my experience, that's something that, you know, if they don't have that, it's going to be really hard for them to be successful in college, because everybody gets to practice, everybody's got great coaching, great scheme. So it's really about the player's ability to make themselves better. You know, that helps them in the long run. So I think that's where you start. And then I think the second piece that, you know, we've certainly leaned on is, as much as we think we can know these guys, you know, no matter how hard we work, we can only see them a certain number of times. So you have to have good relationships in the club game, in the high school game, and you have to be willing to trust people. Because if you can trust people and their opinions on guys and how those guys, you know, value subsects, kind of flesh themselves out, you know, then you can get the right guys. That's certainly something we've tried to do.
You mentioned having something taken away from you, and you were part of that Duke team back in 2006 that experienced that hoax, you know, is the only word I can think of as we describe it. What did that experience teach you? And do you ever look back on it? And if so, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you mentioned looking back on it, you know, it still amazes me to the day that sometimes that stuff will come up and a person will say, hey, whatever happened about with that? You know, and I think that's sad. But, you know, certainly it rears itself every once in a while. You know, and when I think back to, you know, that time, it was a wild time. It really was. I don't think we realized quite how crazy it was, even as a team, until you're now, you know, looking back at it 15, 20 years later. You know, as far as the learning opportunities, you know, I think the very simple one is never putting yourself in a position to, you know, have any of those type of issues arise. You know, never put yourself in a position where you let the devil in the door. You know, I think, you know, those are things that as you're mentoring young guys, you know, certainly you're trying to impress upon them, you know, how they can put themselves in a position to be successful.
Brad, in your first year at Bryant, but everywhere you've been as a player at different levels and as an assistant coach, there's been success. It's been real close by. And you've obviously had your track record says that you've been a big piece of that, even though shortly you've been in some good situations. But how do you translate that into your role at Bryant as a head coach? And how do you build a culture of winning, a sustainable culture of winning, based on some of the experiences that you bring with you to Smithfield?
No, I appreciate you saying that. You know, I honestly defer, though, to the fact that everywhere I've been where we've had success, we've had great people in place. You know, whether that's coaches, you know, recruits, administrators, you don't win without great people. And there's no doubt about that. So I think that's really where, when we started building this thing this summer, you know, I couldn't be more pleased and happy with the staff we're able to create. You know, so first call was to Travis Harrington, who was a player of mine. I graduated from Bryant 2012, you know, was a current assistant on the team. So I've known Travis forever, it feels like. So I had a great personal relationship with him, and he's a terrific coach. So we were able to get him back on board, especially as an alum. And he really knows this place, so that was huge for us. And then how lucky am I to get Chris Gabrielli on the staff? You know, it just happened to work out for me that, you know, Chris, you know, was in a situation where, you know, he didn't know what was going on the next year, and we were able to bring him in. And here I am with a guy who's, you know, Big East Coach of the Year. And it really helped me along this process. And then lastly, the people that don't get a lot of credit, our volunteer assistant, Cole Pecora, was someone that, you know, when I took over, I started calling people I trusted. His name kept popping up, and he's been great for us.
We talked about the record 8-2, the Bryant Bulldogs currently on a 4-game win streak. Who are your leaders, the 2023 edition of Bryant Lacrosse, and some of the key pieces for your ball club?
Well, you know, I would start with the first meeting that we had with the team, and I asked them to define leadership. And, you know, everyone gave kind of the macho answers, and I flipped it a little bit on them and needed them to understand that, you know, leadership to me is simply having influence over people around you. So if you're a freshman, you have influence over somebody. You know, it may not be a senior, but it may be another freshman. So we got to look at this team as having, you know, 55 leaders on it. But, you know, to look at it, you know, from, you know, kind of a more corporate view, you know, certainly our captains, Brody Rule, Kevin Greninger, Zach Lanoux, but overall really strong, you know, upper class group that on any given day, you know, people can step up. And I think one of the things I would love to highlight is that our scout team guys, specifically our sideline guys, have been unbelievable. You know, if you watch us play, I think they're having more fun than the kids that are playing. Sometimes it gets a little out of hand, but they're doing a good job with it.
Your offense has been really humming lately, averaging more than 18 goals a game in conference, almost 16 per game on the entire season. Who are some of the key players in that offensive unit?
You know, I mentioned from a leadership perspective, Kevin Greninger, he moved to attack after playing midfield for 3 years. You know, I was joking the other day when someone said, oh, those were great moves, moving Goltz and Greninger to attack. And I laughed because the first day of individual work with all the transfers and the people leaving, we had four attacking. So we didn't really have a whole lot of choice there. But Kevin's been great. Aiden Goltz, Jack Lonsinger offensively. You know, in the midfield, the Hackett brothers, Timmy, a senior, Johnny, a freshman. Conrick Mann's been terrific as a grad student from Mount. And then that second midfield group, you know, has certainly come into their own a little bit down the stretch. But you mentioned the offensive stuff, and everybody who knows lacrosse knows that's a collective effort, certainly not just in the box. You know, we got a faceoff guy, Nate Liberty, with 10 points, you know, a couple defense and, you know, with some points. So those guys do a great job getting up the field.
You mentioned Nate Liberty. He's facing off at 63%. What does he do well? And how much of a luxury is that when you get a faceoff man of his caliber?
Well, I mean, I honestly think we've got two of them. You know, I think.
Yeah, Jacob, I was going to get to Alexander as well. I mean, he's not shabby either.
No, he's definitely not shabby. He's a great faceoff man. And, you know, he's had a little bit of a downturn recently, but we know what he's capable of. He's faced off at the highest level and done great. So going down the stretch here, having two guys you can trust and believe in, especially with who we got coming up, you know, and the Burke kid at Vermont and certainly a Binghamton kid just in the next 2 weeks. So, you know, those two guys battle each other. And this young guy, JJ Murphy, who's redshirting, who's also, you know, very good. So we couldn't be more excited about the future there. You know, Nate and Jacob are a little bit different. Jacob's, you know, what I would say a little bit more of a technician, you know, whereas Nate is a little bit more of a scrapper. You know, Nate is, you know, more capable offensively, you know, although Jacob may think he is at times, but we got to reel him in a little bit, but he's been doing good.
Coach, Saturday you'll head to Vermont for a huge America East game. First place is on the line. What's been your impression of the Catamounts, the things you've seen on film and in your scouting, and what are the keys to winning on Saturday?
Well, I mean, the first number to me, I believe it's 14, it may be 16. It's at least 14 straight American East games for Vermont. So that number is super overwhelming. It just goes to show you how dominant they've been these last couple of years. When you zoom out and look at their program as a whole, Chris has done an awesome job there. He's been there for a number of years. They've got really good veteran players, and they're great in the boxes. So I think it'll be certainly a huge test for us because they're terrific defensively. They've got some really good older veteran players complemented by some young guys who are pretty dynamic, and they're terrific in the middle of the field. You know, they're one of the top faceoff teams in the country. They've got some really good poles and short sticks. So it's going to take a great effort.
Coach, some more non-lacrosse related questions sort of to bring this home. One of the fun aspects of working in a college athletic department is building relationships with other coaches from different sports and student athletes from other teams. If you can name one particular Bryant team that you particularly like to watch play, who would that be?
Oh gosh, that's a tough question. You know, certainly football in the fall was fun to watch. Basketball program has been terrific. Coach Grass has done a great job. You know, I think most recently, you know, I love the new men's soccer coach, Ruben Resendiz. He's awesome. He's got a camp going on right now. My daughter's at during April vacation, which I never heard of until I moved to New England. He's got a lot of juice and excitement. He's going to get that men's soccer program rolling. There's no doubt about it.
All right, final question. Talk about food all the time here. We had Coach Benson on earlier. We know Providence has a very underrated food scene, the part of Rhode Island. If someone's coming into town to visit Bryant, what restaurant or restaurants do you recommend they go to?
Oh, that's a good one. I don't know if I'm a great person to ask because I got three kids under seven. So unless they serve, you know, chicken tenders and pasta with marinara, we're not going to it. So I don't think we frequent the five-star establishments in the area.
I'm in the same boat. It's my daughter. No matter where we go, it's chicken tenders and French fries everywhere.
Yeah.
I've seen some of the finest restaurants, chicken tenders before.
Yeah.
Now I have a ranking system for them as well.
Yeah.
And she tends to, if they do them themselves, if they do their own battering and the restaurant, the better the chicken tender, she refuses to eat them. She wants the.
My kids are like that with mac and cheese.
Yeah.
If it's not Kraft, then they're not eating it.
If it's not out of a box, they don't want it.
Yeah.
But your aunt made this in the oven. It's really good. It's like homemade
mac and cheese. I don't like it.
No, don't get it away from me. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. All right, Brad, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck to you and the Bulldogs.
Thank you.
This week and throughout the rest of the season. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
It's good to talk to him. Dix, you got me with one of your questions when you asked about Duke coaches in the NCAA. I always think of Hopkins has a ton of guys, right? A lot of our friends in the coaching ranks.
Mm-hmm.
I was stunned at starting to think about how many Duke guys there are.
Well, you know, I do a little bit of preparation for the interviews, but not much. So when I asked the question, you know, what did I mention? I mentioned Justin Turry in his first year at St. John's. I mentioned a couple of assistant coaches. I totally short shifted Dan Shamati at Richmond. Kevin Cassis.
Yeah.
A longtime friend at Lehigh. I think I threw in Taylor Ray at St. Joe's. I mean, who were some of the others? He mentioned Kyle Turry is coaching as well. But I mean, that's a lot of guys. It's a lot of Blue Devils.
Who's got more? The Hopkins or Duke? I'm going to have to make a chart.
Yeah. I mean, Hopkins, of course, what? Volker at Drexel, Tierney at Hofstra, Marr at Albany, Benson at Providence, Raymond at Hobart, Natalie at Towson.
Kevin Connery.
Connery at Michigan. I think Hopkins may have more, at least in the head coaching ranks. But, dude, I mean, they're catching up.
Yeah. So, big game. Bryant is 8-2. They're 4-0 in the America East. Vermont is 6-4 overall. A little tougher strength of schedule, maybe. They're 4-0 in the league. And this game will be in Vermont at 3:30. And it's a big game.
Historically, the America East has been a string of runs, you know, for the champions. You think about UMBC and the run that they had. They made the quarterfinals back in 2007. Then Albany took that over with the Thompson brothers, you know, running the America East, really. And now you have Vermont has kind of taken that mantle. Catamounts have really ruled the America East the last few years, been to the NCAA tournament. Bryant, the transfer from the Northeast Conference into the America East, looking to make a statement. This is a big opportunity for the Bulldogs.
One more game on Saturday. I want to get your opinion on number 11, North Carolina, 7-3, 1-1 in the ACC, will play Syracuse, who's now up to number 17 in the polls. They're 7-5 overall, still winless in the ACC, though. This game will be at Good Counsel High School in Olney, Maryland at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, neutral site. Good for recruiting for both, being in that DMV corridor. Game will be on ESPNU. It's Anish and Quint Kesnick are on the call, I believe. Carolina went up to the Dome, just put on a shooting clinic earlier in the season. They shot the lights out and with force and with accuracy and everything. Syracuse, big win on the road against Princeton this past weekend. But, you know, I think I saw a graphic or something. The Orange Hit doesn't have any top 20 wins in terms of ranked teams. You know, the metrics and all that are a different story. And I know the rankings are one thing, but this is a huge opportunity for the Orange to not only get their first ACC win, but to beat a team in the top 15.
Moving on to Sunday's matchups, number 5 Penn State, tied for first place with Hopkins and Maryland in the Big Ten, will take on number 15 Michigan. This will be in Ann Arbor at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, I've become a huge Penn State fan. This 23 team is just athletic. They're tough. They fell behind at home 5-0 to Hopkins. They were like sleepwalking through the first quarter, came back, won the game in overtime. I think they are really buttoned up, and they really have strength all over the field. Michigan, heartbreaking loss to Rutgers, trying to build on that momentum after knocking off Maryland. They're going to be hungry. Huge game for the Wolverines. They're 500. And we should talk about that with Ohio State and Michigan. You know, you don't qualify for the NCAA tournament if you do have a sub 500 record. So you just want to get above, and obviously they both have the Big Ten tournament, but you want to get as far above that Mendoza line as you can, you know, giving yourself room for error when it comes to the conference tournament.
And finally, a top 10 battle in New Jersey, number 4, Maryland, 7-3, 2-1, play number 9, Rutgers, who's 8-3 overall. This game is at 7 o'clock, caps the weekend on Sunday night.
Sunday night lacrosse on Big Ten Network. Joe and I will have the call. Maryland survives in Ohio State, outlasts the Buckeyes, but this is a resilient team. You know, push glove gate aside, they hung tough, made plays. Their second midfield of Spanos, Siracusa, and Whittier carried the mail in the fourth quarter and the overtime. You know, the first midfield was ineffective and didn't play much in the late stages of that game. So Maryland showing off their depth. They go into Rutgers. Brian Cameron is back. Huge win over Michigan. Did not want to go down 0-3 in the conference record-wise. Rutgers has beaten every other team in the Big Ten since the formation of the conference, except Maryland. Is this the night they can take down the Terps?
Great week of action. Be sure to set your schedule and get out to see the games. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go. You talked about being in Chicago last week, and I'm sure you tried or had your fill of that abomination that they call pizza out there. So our topic this week is going to be pizza. And a couple of questions to start, and then we're going to talk about toppings specifically. You're going to rank toppings on 1 to 10, 10 being the best on a pizza. All right, first question. Deep dish or New York style?
New York style all day.
Yeah, all day.
I did have a deep dish for the first time in Chicago. It was okay. I got it from my hotel bar, which was a swanky hotel bar. I didn't get to go to a place like Giordano's. But it takes a while for them to cook it. I mean, it takes like 40 minutes to cook.
Sure. It's a casserole.
Yeah.
No,
New York style all day.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a question. Is pizza enough for dinner? Or do you need to have something else along with it, like salad or wings or something?
I mean, pizza can be a dinner, but you like to offset it at least mentally, thinking that, you know, that you're eating something healthy. So a salad is always good to go with a pizza.
I agree. I like to have something else with my pizza, whether it's wings or salad or both.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question is, you do stuffed crust or any of that insane propaganda, the pizza, big pizza that sends our way?
No. I have had stuffed crust pizza before, Pizza Hut, and I thought it was pretty good, but I was in my 20s, I think, when I did that. That almost would be, setting myself up for health failure if I ate that these days. I mean, look, cheesy bread is amazing. You know, that's good stuff. But, you know, as I've gotten older too, I've grown a deeper appreciation for, you know, the trattorias that are in our neighborhoods, you know, like some real pizza. I mean, Maryland pizza can't compare to New York, New Jersey. I'm not even going to try to go there. But when you talk about like Pizza Hut, Domino's, Papa John's, like, yeah, that stuff is more just like, you know, dough with sauce and cheese.
Yeah, the local pizza shop is especially the one in my neighborhood. They're they speak Italian in there, the workers, and that's always seems to be like a good sign to me.
Oh yeah, well, same. We have it's the same family. The trattoria. Oh. We have Trattoria Amore. You have Trattoria. What's yours?
Enrico.
Yeah, so it's the same. I think it's the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to some toppings. All right, you're going to rank them on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best. Just a nice plain cheese.
7.
Pepperoni.
2. I don't like pepperoni.
Oh, that's a big thing for
me. Not a pepperoni guy.
Mushroom.
You know what? I had this discussion with somebody recently. I like, I almost like canned mushrooms better than fresh mushroom, but that's my go-to slice in New York is a mushroom slice.
Oh, I like
So
what I'm hearing.
I would say nine.
Okay, I like what I'm hearing there. See, what we do in my house is my kids won't eat anything on it. Bennett will eat pepperoni, but usually we'll just do a full pizza and get pepperoni and mushroom on half of it for me and the wife. And then the kids eat the cheese half. And that's, you know, everybody gets a couple slices. We get the giant pizza and that works out. All right, next topping, sausage.
My kids love sausage. I could take it or leave it. For me, it's about a six. My kids, it's a 10.
Oh, okay. So I'm about where you are. It's not what I would go to. It's not one of my top ones that I would get, but it's if someone else has ordered it, I'm not going to stop myself. What about the meatball? Meatballs on
not a I'm not a big meatball guy. I call that a five as well. I'm more of a ground beef. Growing up, on Saturday nights, my dad used to get pizza for us, patio pizza, shout out Route 40, Catonsville. I don't think it's there anymore, but he used to go with the green pepper and ground beef. So I kind of grew up on that. So I'm partial to ground beef over meatball. Meatball is like a five, six.
I'd give meatballs like a three and ground beef like a five. All
okay.
Right. What about the meat lovers where they lop everything on there and then you can't even like eat it? I think it's too much.
Yeah, it can be gross. I'd give that like a four.
All right. What about green peppers and or onions, black olives, like a veggie pizza?
Black olives is like a five. Green pepper and onions, though, that's eight. Eight, nine. I like both of those.
That combination, green peppers and onions, works with any kind of like Italian food almost. It's like almost needs to be in the background.
And I think I need to mention, I love crushed red pepper. That's like a 9, 10 on my pizza slice.
So what about broccoli or some other like sun-dried tomatoes?
I hate tomato. I hate tomato on pizzas. That's a zero or a one. If it's 1 to 10, that's a one. Hate tomato. I hate warm tomatoes. They're gross. Broccoli, that's like a three. I mean, if you get a veggie lovers and you get a little broccoli on it, that's okay.
Okay. This is the key question here. The Hawaiian pizza, ham and pineapple.
Hell no. No, absolutely not.
I would eat it again if that's the only food that's there, but I would never order that for myself.
No way.
Yeah. And then the last one, you ever been to like a Pasta Mista place up in Towson on York Road?
I haven't. I'm not a big Pasta Mista guy.
Oh, man, that used to be when I worked at Towson, we would eat there. Tony Seaman and the guys, we would go there three times a week. But they put stuff on the pizza, whether it's like baked ziti or chicken parm. It's like a meal that's on top.
Oh, wow.
Delicious. But you can eat like one slice, two slices. You're good on that or not? Again, I wouldn't get it for myself, but I would eat it there.
I would eat it if it were there, but I probably wouldn't order it on my own.
Yeah, you got me hungry for lunch here, Dix. Good place to wrap up. We'd like to thank our guest this week, Brian head coach Brad Ross. Coach, thanks for joining us. Best of luck to the Bulldogs moving forward this season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. And we'd love to hear from you. This worked out last week, Dix. I gave out my email address and heard from a bunch of people, including some people who are interested in sponsoring. So if you want to get involved in the podcast and you'd like to sponsor an episode or just say hello, my email is dbflynn@gmail.com. That's D as in Dan, B as in Bennett, Flynn, FLYNN@gmail.com. dbflynn@gmail.com. On Twitter, he's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLY. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.